feels to me like there's this entire world. It's this world that they've built, and it's like, come into this world and get a taste of it by whatever it means it is that you have, whether it's by purchasing or whether it's really just by looking at it, just observing it from the outside.
Welcome to Old Money, a show dedicated to helping you build the trust fund you wish you were born with. Ladies who lunch, listen up. Life is not about looking rich. I want you to build a life and a legacy that feels rich in every sense of the word. If you're ready to stack cash, talk shop, and trade insider secrets, you're in the right place. These are the new rules to old money, so let's get after it.
Hello, rich girls. Welcome back to Old Money, the podcast for women building the trust funds they wish they were born with. I'm your host, Amber Frankiesen, and today I am joined by a friend, a very special guest. Today's episode is going to be such a treat because we're here to spill all the tea on the business of luxury. And trust me, it's not what you would expect. Our guest today is a true expert in the world of high-end fashion, luxury business. She holds a master's in luxury business, where she got a front row seat to how luxury brands operate, not just from her textbooks, but by immersing herself in the lifestyle, meeting the key players, and working in the industry herself. Please give a very warm welcome to my friend and fellow podcast host, Mackenzie Belcastro.
Thank you so much, Amber. That was such a beautiful intro, and I'm just so excited to be here with you.
I'm so excited to have you and your beautiful energy. For anybody who doesn't know yet, or you don't recognize the name, you're like, I know this name. How do I know this name? It's because Mackenzie was kind enough to host me on her podcast, and we had such a beautiful conversation about the intersection of personal development and spirituality and money and women and all the things. So if you haven't listened to that, I'm going to link it as well in the show notes to go give Mackenzie some love on her podcast, because it was a great conversation.
It was. Thank you again for coming on. That was so fun. Again, sort of like we were talking before, it's like things don't always go according to script. Like some of the things that we were talking about, I was like, didn't know we were going to go here, but I'm in for it. Loved it.
Yeah. If the audience can't tell already by Mackenzie's voice, her energy is so safe and soothing. And you'll learn more about why that is and what she's doing now later on in the show. But on your podcast, I said things and kind of revealed parts of my story that I never had before that I didn't really even know I needed to reveal. And so listening back to that podcast, it was actually therapy for me. So thank you for holding space for me in that way.
That's so cool. I don't even know if I knew that, but that's so sweet to hear. I mean, what a gift.
Well, let's take a hard left turn today. And we have so much to discuss as it relates to development and spirituality and feeling safe in our bodies and with money. And one of the things I want our rich girls to do is feel safe in the world of luxury. And I think it's a space where a lot of people can feel intimidated. And my mission here is to help our rich girls be the smartest consumers possible. So we had to bring in the expert on all things luxury. So Mackenzie, why don't you start us off by telling us why you decided to study luxury business?
It's a great question. I had been very interested in that industry since I was little, honestly. Like when I was 8, I remember we had me and my multiple personalities had this interest in magazines. And, you know, it was like the day and age of gathering all the magazines, putting them up on the walls, like that whole thing. And it's funny because, of course, magazines didn't need to be necessarily speaking to high fashion. It was just kind of like, I think it was a sign of the time, sort of like how when blogging became a thing, fashion was kind of the main thing that spearheaded the whole blogging movement.
Yeah.
And so I think my interest in honestly magazines and like the paper and all of like the whole experience of that whole thing as a younger person, it was what tipped me over into that world of fashion. So when I was working at my first corporate job post college, I was not happy. It was exactly what I didn't expect. It felt like I was in prison. And my mind was just like, what made me happy before? So my entire undergrad, I was interning at magazines and I was in that world. And so my mind just went right back there. Well, I would love to know more. And so I started looking, and I was in Canada at the time. But I mean, honestly, the reason I ended up at the school that I was is it was super late in the school in terms of application times. And this school in Italy, Polimoda, where I ended up going, I mean, Italians do things differently. They are not like the French or the German, or they are just so laissez-faire that I could apply like 2 months prior to this program actually starting. And so that was like, there was an opening. I got a chance to speak with them like the next week post finding this program. And when I looked at what was available, I was like, I'm not a designer. I'm terrible at everything visual art, but I knew I liked fashion. I knew it at the time. I was like very into it. And there was this program, Luxury Business. And I felt, okay, I'm not a creative person. I didn't identify with that at all. I identified with, okay, I can use my mind. Business makes sense. There's this program. There's only a few. And I was like, this looks interesting. It was broad enough that with all my insecurities, I was like, well, I don't need to be a creative person to go into that. I can just be me, and I can go into this program and see what it's all about and learn more. And it was this super broad-based program wherein if I remember correctly, we had like a few classes at a time, but over the course of the program, we would have these chunks of exploring basically different departments that one could be in, were you to work at Prada, for example, behind you, or Chanel or whatnot. So for me, who was so lost and really didn't know who I was, it was like, oh, this is great. It's broad enough. And it's the business side. Don't have to deal with my fear of creativity, basically.
That's very honest. I mean, what were these different sectors? Were you going into like finance and promotions and like, tell us about that.
Yeah. So we did finance. Finance, for me, it was basically accounting. It was so hard for me to keep my eyes open in that class. It was really kind of typical, like profit and loss. Like it was very good to learn. It was learning what assets are, what liabilities are, what all of these terminology, which if you want to learn this stuff, honestly, it is helpful to learn it in a classroom context, especially like the incentivization of a good grade. That was helpful for someone like myself who was like, if I was on my own, you know, I didn't have Amber and her brilliant people to speak about these money-related topics to me at the time to make it more fun. And so that was one part. We had an entrepreneurship class, which basically meant our teacher was, or he still is, he's a designer within, I guess he would be called a designer. Basically, he creates luxury leather goods. Mm-hmm. He has an office in New York and an office in Florence. And yeah, they have a name. So I guess he would be called a designer. He didn't seem like a designer to me. He was very much this guy who is very into super high-end leather and just talked to us about leather all the time. Like, that's what I remember from this class, as well as, of course, that which goes into really being an entrepreneur. But the classes I remember the most that really stood out to me were more of the marketing, the journalism aspect. So we had all of those. We had marketing pretty much as far as I can remember throughout the entire program. Whereas things like the finance portion, or at some point we even studied resorts and like how luxury, because of course luxury is not just fashion. So we also studied where people might want to stay. And that was very interesting to me. We even had a cars class. We learned about like luxury cars. Like, it was so different than anything that I think I would have found in North America, that it was super interesting. But yeah, the marketing classes stood out to me the most, for sure.
I love that. I'm happy to hear that, because that's what a lot of what I want to talk to you about today. But I also want to underscore that it's so interesting, your experience of, you know, going through undergrad, getting that corporate job, and then looking for something to escape to. I also had a very similar experience in the way that those magazines were an escape for me. I grew up in the suburbs in a beautiful community, but it was, everything was the same. All the homes were the same. All the people were the same. And I, like you, I subscribed to Vogue, and I would rip the pages out and staple them to my wall. I had thousands of pictures up, and it was just this, like, there's something else out there for me. There is another thing to discover. And it's this world of luxury. It's this world of excess and beauty and, you know, I'm not a tourist, but like that appreciation of things that are beautiful just for the sake of being beautiful. Yes. What is it about luxury that draws us all in, Mackenzie?
You know, I think it is what it is that we did learn so much. So, I mean, throughout the whole program, but particularly in those marketing classes, I think, and I'm sure people will have their own answers, but what feels true to me is that there's a depth to it And with that depth, there is a, of course, an endurance. There's a story. And of course, all marketing is a story. But when we compare it to the sorts of, let's just say a typical commercial that we would have seen as well at that time when commercials were all over the TV, they were attempting at least to tell us some kind of story within those 30-second brackets of time.
Yeah.
But the stories we would have been exposed to by Vogue, even with the editorials, right? Like not even necessarily in their commercials, but in their editorials. I mean, oh my God, that was to me at the time, I was like,
beyond.
Just, I can die now because this is like the most wondrous thing I've ever seen in my life. So I think it's when I speak about it more, it feels to me like there's this entire world. And you actually said that. It's like, it's this escape. It's this world that they built. And it's like, come into this world and get a taste of it by whatever it means it is that you have, whether it's by purchasing or whether it's really just by being like we probably were at the time, like these like younger people who are just looking at it, just observing it from the outside. Yeah. Like
creative people that appreciate the art, that want to be close to it, I feel. And, you know, we had discussed earlier and you had some great notes about, you know, what makes a brand luxury. And I have a theory and I want to test, pressure test with you, because a lot of the things that you called out, like storytelling or craftsmanship, this exclusive club type of a thing, I really find that luxury brands do a good job of tapping into the things that as humans, evolutionarily speaking, are known to us, like the storytelling and the, you know, the group, the membership, the community, the heritage, like you say.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of brands today, they go based on utility or cost, and there's no emotion with that, right?
Yeah.
And so the luxury brand world takes the time to develop the story. They have the heritage. They've been around for so long. They have the benefit of time. What do you think about that? And can you speak to some of these different techniques that luxury brands use to make themselves luxury?
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with what you're saying. There is this deeper psychology. I was always interested in it. I didn't quite find a program at the time, but in the whole fashion psychology world, but I think you've just named it. We don't need it. It's not even any more than that, other than there are these pieces within our humanity that speak to us and these ways of communicating that we've communicated since pre-tribal times of like these, like what were they called? Pictographs on the sides of the cave. Yeah. And it was all. I mean, back then people took the time to like scratch things into the cave and it did tell some sort of story. And it evoked this emotion and it strikes a chord with us. It's like when we read a novel, right? Or when you watch a movie, it's not because of the world itself, which I mean, there is so much of that, but it's what is that doing within us? What am I seeing about myself in this, or perhaps what I could be if it's more aspirational versus.
That's a big one. I like that you called that out. What could I be if I had that watch, if I had that dress, who would I be?
What could I, so one of, and I cannot, I wish I could remember exactly what brand it is right now, but I think it was probably Patek Philippe. Which like there is these beautiful, basically like all the watch brands, I think, have these incredible ads. And I remember my teacher, I was obsessed with this teacher. She was like this, I think, I want to say like 46-year-old woman, just beautiful Italian woman, would show us these incredible ads. And she would just have this voice and everything was a bit so melodious, but the whole experience. And she would just show us these ads of this father passing down the watch to his son.
I know exactly what ad you're talking about. And the thing is, my Instagram followers will know, I love this ad so much, Mackenzie. I'm going to let you finish, but I have to interject. Yeah. Every time we go to Las Vegas, we go to the same watch store and that ad hangs on the wall. And I take a picture of it and post it every single time I'm there because it is the best copywriting I've ever seen in my life.
What? Okay, so do you know then what brand it is?
Because it is Patek. Yes, it is.
It is. Yeah. Okay.
From the punchline, what's the copy say?
No, I don't know what the copy says. Oh, you remind me if you know it.
It says, you never truly own a Patek. You only hold it for the next generation.
Yes. Oh my, I just got shivers just hearing that because in seeing this And again, I cannot even fully recall, was it a movie that we saw or was it just a series of images? In my brain, it registered as a movie, whether or not it was.
Wow. Okay.
And I have this, it really felt like this very short piece of art that I was watching, and it evoked so much within me. And why I brought that up, not just because it's incredibly gorgeous, and I'm so glad that your community already is probably quite aware of it, but in terms of what you pointed out there with what could I be, mm-hmm. it makes me think, like, I'm not a man, but it makes me think of if I was, it would make me think, what kind of like son would I have? What kind of father could I be? Or in our context, what kind of mother would I be? What kind of family, ultimately, what kind of family might I have? What kind of relationships could I have with my future children, et cetera, et cetera. We could extrapolate on that forever, yeah, right?
100%. And it also gives you this prestige of, I'm the type of man who holds things for my son. I'm part of this group of a larger group of men, still very exclusive, who can afford mm-hmm. the tech and mm-hmm. will pass it along. Like, that has something to do with that legacy, family values, all of those things. You're so right. Yeah. It taps into just the core of who we are as humans and our family mm-hmm. of origin. And then attaching an object that you can buy to that value, I think is perfect marketing.
It is. You know, it's so funny. I just had this memory pop up right at the end of your sentence there of how what gave me similar like sensations when I was so young. I must have been like 10 years old. And it was, you know, remember like when those like Louis Vuitton like monogram was just like so popular?
1,000%.
Yeah. And I remember like I had this like visceral like reaction to them. Like, they made me feel like now how any form of inspiration makes me feel. But at the time, it was almost like my first experience of inspiration. I actually think, looking back, like there was something about seeing it, imagining myself having it. I did not have it, but imagining it gave me this like spark, this like light within me. And I would imagine that that's what people are getting. Again, it's that within you, what's expanding.
Beautiful. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think the Louis Vuitton example is also very personal to me because my mother carried Louis Vuitton bags when I was growing up. And to me, there was nobody more glamorous than my mother. And I have like very vivid memories of standing, like as a small person, being eye level with her purse hanging down by her waist in the grocery line, being like, I want one of those one day. And that has, I mean, that brand has definitely changed so much in the last 25 years. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. Like, what is happening now in luxury? Like, who are the luxury buyers today?
Yeah. Here's the funny thing. From what I have seen and from what I think studies are still showing is that still the buyers, the actual buyers, are still those who are the ultra wealthy, right? I mean, that sounds obvious, but when we think about that isn't necessarily like the youngest age bracket that we might assume based on ads that seem to be targeting 20-year-olds who I'm not really sure. There's probably not a ton of, you know, 19-year-olds who are purchasing them. I think we're still very much seeing that it is an older subset. Mm-hmm. However, of course, there is purchasing for kids, and we see this all over TikTok, and especially now, there is a very, it feels disheartening to me. I wish I could speak about this in a more positive way, but it's hard for me to see the way that kids who are given so much access nowadays, like, so I still think the purchasers are still the parents, are still the people higher up, but the people who are receiving it, there is a lot of like Gen Zs and younger actually who are receiving. It feels like, but the nature of TikTok or something, it's making things feel so cheap and so discard. I'm not sure what the word is. Discardable. Disposable. Yes. Discardable. Disposable. And it, because honestly, I was just watching this. I'm not even really on TikTok, but I watch YouTube videos of like essays, like video essays on it, which is how I see all my TikTok information that I need to see. Yes.
Nice.
And this wonderful woman created this video, but it opened my eyes to just how so many young people are treating these products. And it feels like the ones that do have that access are treating it like it's H&M.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I couldn't believe, I mean, I was like, it made me sad actually.
Yeah. I, I think I agree with you. And I think there's a, I mean, the brand that I see this commoditization of luxury the most is in Gucci, where, you know, growing up in the Tom Ford at Gucci era, where like I could cry, like thinking about the garments that were created and the woman that I wanted to be seeing those. And then, you know, there was this really big, I don't want to say shift from luxury. I don't know what caused it, but how can I get a piece of that label? And then we started to see the belts and then we started to see, you know, the smaller leather goods and that the belts, you know, Gucci is a great example. Those big GG belts went out of style, right? But you could get one on DHgate to signal to other people that you were aware of and a part of that brand. Yeah. And I feel you on that disposableness because I feel like there's so much more trend in luxury now than there ever was before, where before it was about classic pieces and collectibles and specific designers. And now it's more about a signal. It's more about, I have this and I'm part of it.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing, this is really random, Mackenzie, but I have this like huge problem with this one toy for kids. Have you ever heard of mini brands?
No.
So niche. Okay. You're going to freak. This was... And I remember so vividly, it was the Christmas of 2019 and I was at my aunt's house and nieces and nephews are younger, under 10. And they all wanted and were so excited to get for Christmas that year, mini brands.
Okay.
And again, this was right before TikTok blew up in COVID. I had just downloaded TikTok that December and mini brands, like what is mini brands? And they were these plastic balls that broke apart kind of like an orange, right? And so in each of the orange slices, so to speak, you could open them up and inside of them was a mini thing. And that thing was a mini Wheaties or a mini Windex or a mini Brawny paper towels or mini, all of these mini Dawn soaps. And I'm talking mini, like I'm holding my fingers up, like less than an inch tall. What? And I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
And like, they're collectibles. We are trying to collect them all. And some of them are really hard to find and da-da-da. And I was like, give me that packaging. Like, who made this toy? Is it Procter & Gamble? Like, they're conditioning you to be Dawn soap consumers when you're 10 years old so that you buy Dawn soap for the rest of time.
100%.
And I kind of feel like that's what's happening in luxury right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see it in consumer packaged goods. Like, kids these days, the parents are not feeding them Doritos or Cheetos or Oreos. They're getting, like, Annie's, you know, Treader Bunnies. Like, that's what they will buy for the rest of their lives.
It's
when you get introduced to something as a child, as a young consumer, then you're more aware of it the rest of your life and continue to buy. And I feel like I've seen a lot of that, especially with the product placement, with the you know, celebrity endorsements targeting these younger Gen Zs to get them to want to be consumers of that brand forever.
Well, and Fula, like that is it. I mean, even to think of, I mean, that's undoubtedly what the meetings are about. I'm just thinking within the offices for sure. It's and it makes sense from a business perspective. Like, like let's create our fan base as young as we can and this build this like legacy, like relationship almost with them that lasts. And it you could spin it to sound wonderful, but it's just weird. It's weird. To me, it's just bizarre. Like the fact that like, I mean, there's so much, honestly, like there's so many different things that come to mind, but there is this like, there is this cheapening. And I guess you could see it in another way of, okay, it's great that other people are receiving a piece of this world. Like, I guess that's the idea with like the beauty, like Dior Beauty, for example. Like I remember buying like lip glosses when I was like 14. Okay, it's $20. It's so expensive, but I can get a piece of Dior. Like it was, and so that is a beautiful thing. And I think things are not black and white. So I get it. And same with like the experiences, like the cafes, there's a Gucci cafe in Florence.
I've been, it's lovely.
So there's always like kind of like multiple sides. I don't know. Like, what do you think about that? Because there are different sides to it. There's like in this way, a bit of a feeling of watering down certain things and perhaps succumbing to the over consumerism and all of that kind of stuff. And there's like, let's create more entry for other people.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's not black and white because the Gucci cafe experience in Florence and this, it's tucked away in a corner of this beautiful piazza, and it's right next to this Gucci museum, which has all of these archival pieces, and it's so immersive and wonderful. Yeah. And then you get to go kind of finish that experience and you sit down at a whatever table, but they have, you know, the menus that are coated in green velvet and these like very, I don't know, like deep red flowers, and it feels just cohesive, and the environment, the aesthetic is so pleasing. Mm-hmm. And it really, it didn't feel cheap, but it also is anybody can go there. Yeah. And I don't think that that's wrong. Like, I want people to experience that, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I do think that also this over availability is what's driven, I want to call it like the higher end luxury market, more towards this discretion and quiet luxury trend.
Yeah, I love that you made that distinction, because I was trying to get my brain to make that, because I was like, it's not all one way. Like, there are certain facets of this industry. And yes, I do like the wonderful brands that we've never heard of. Like, prior to being in this program, I had no idea. Like, I still don't even know how to pronounce it. Is it Moina? Is it? I have no idea.
Girl, I have no idea.
But when I like, and also like when I came upon it, like they look so basic, but knowing again, like the history, like, oh my goodness, this brand has been around forever, and the quality, and my teachers would like speak to the quality and like tell us the difference about certain types of leather, and how I had this hilarious teacher who'd be like, you can tell good quality or bad quality leather by like burning, basically. Like, if he's like, because he would have all these samples, so he wasn't burning bags, but he would have these samples and be like, one of them burns like dark and one of them burns lighter, like they're like different colors, in which and I think it was like actually like what we would expect. I could be wrong, but I think he was saying like, this one will burn black, this one will burn like much lighter color, and this is a cheaper leather and this is a more prestigious leather. Anyway, when I just like learning about these like little details gives you that appreciation, because you're like, wow, this bag that if you saw it on the shelf, you'd be like, honestly, from far enough away, it could be a Zara bag, but knowing how much time and how much... Yeah, it's this time. And also in this day and age, it almost feels like risk, because our society is moving so fast. If you're really daring to move slow, like you're going against the curb, you're risking your quote unquote risking your funds, all of this kind of stuff. You're just, going against the grain. It's, it is risk, I guess.
Yeah. And when you say going slow too, I think that's I've never thought of it that way, but it can almost be like, you know, like a Loro Piana moves slow. They don't introduce they have new clothes every season, but like they have kind of this aesthetic, this look, this, and everything's a version of the same version, right? Like it evolves very slowly, versus you see a Balenciaga and like, who knows what they're going to come out with the next season, like full face masks. I don't know. Well, actually, they've done that before, but anyway, I think, one of the things that you mentioned in your notes when we were discussing this before we recorded was, you know, Canada Goose's Black Label line versus their regular. Yeah. I didn't even know that existed. Can you talk to us about these different types of ways that brands are going towards discretion?
Yeah. Okay. So, candidly, the corporate company I worked for was Canada Goose. So this is how I knew about that. Mm-hmm. Because my boss, who still is the CEO of the company, he, even though the job was not for me, he was wonderful to me. He brought me, I remember I was sitting at the desk, who knows where my mind was at the time. And he comes over and he like gives me this magazine, and it was about conspicuous consumption. And I'll like never forget that moment, because I felt so cared for. He was like, he wanted me to learn. He wanted me to like, he knew I was interested in the industry. He's like, read this article. Just read this article. Like, you'll probably like it. And this was so long ago. And yet this article was in like Forbes or something like this at the time. And they were talking about how the way that things are going, and that sounds very generic, this article kind of made it seem that way, but basically the way that certain brands are deciding to go is more under the radar, which is exactly what you've talked about with quiet luxury. It's, let's be discreet. It's like when you meet that man who's just like in a t-shirt and jeans, and then you find out later he's like a billionaire. It's like they have nothing to prove. Mm-hmm. And so they can really, it's almost like take away all the noise and just like leave you with the goodness. That's sort of like how I see it. So for instance, with that company, like the black label, it's the exact same label, but everything's drenched in black. So there's no color or anything. Mm-hmm. You can only see the detail of like the, I don't even know what's on it. I should go check it. There's like little, whatever it says, Canada Goose stars or whatever the heck is on there, but it's just like drenched in black. So unless you were walking by someone and you like knew about it, you wouldn't necessarily know, which is great if you're worried about getting robbed. But then also just like, I guess the idea is class and the idea is like, you don't need to show off. And I think there is a little bit of a, let's protect ourselves a little bit in this day and age of recessions and whatnot. Like, let's not be like the peacock in the room when people are going through it. So we have money, let's buy things. Okay. Like there's no shame in that at all. You like, you do you, but also it's kind of like, it's just this like more subtle, classy way of just garmenting yourself in something that feels good to you, but not needing to signal to other people, look what I have.
Yeah. And is the Black Label line much more expensive?
So it is more expensive. I can't remember how much more it is, like percentage wise. It's a few hundred. It's nothing. I don't think it's like crazy more.
It's definitely an intentional choice. Like I'm going to make this the premium option for the person that, I get what you're, where you're going with this.
That's same with those brands. And even like, I'm not sure what Celine looks like nowadays because I kind of stopped following.
It's
but
bad.
In the Phoebe Philo kind of days, like the golden era of Celine, it was like, to me, that brand also kind of symbolized that because I mean, it was freaking gorgeous and everyone who knew kind of like the whole notion of this quiet luxury idea. Yes. People who knew would be like, that is probably Celine. But if you had no idea, you'd just be like, that's a great jacket. It's probably from Zara. Like if you, you wouldn't know because it was just like a cool cut. Yeah.
Yeah. I just read an article this week that said that last week of February marked the very end of the Phoebe Philo era of Celine because they are no longer carrying the luggage tote or the belt bag in any of the boutiques moving forward. And yes, you guys can't see her, but Mackenzie just dropped her jaw and put her hands to her
face. My everything is hurting. That's 100%. Terrifying.
Because now it is all, it is 100% logoed. Everything that they create, all of their bags are all logoed. And for me, that was one of the first, actually, that's not true. I have another quiet luxury story that was on accident, but that was one of the first brands I really gravitated to that wasn't labeled because of the silhouettes and the style. And again, that woman you were going to be. I do have a funny story about quiet luxury too, that I learned from a very unexpected source. But when I was in high school, I was very lucky to have, as most high school girls my age did, a Jetta as the car that I drove. And this car that I drove, was supposed to be my mother's. She was going to take it over. That's a long story, but she ended up not. Anyway, it was the upgraded one. Mm-hmm. And, the boy that I dated when I was in high school and college, who was just so smart and so mechanical, but also just like not the type of person that I thought I would ever learn luxury from, he said, we have to take the badges off of your car. And I was like, no, well then nobody will know that it's the nice one. And he goes, no, that's what you're missing. The people who know will know whether there's a label on it or not. And the people have to be told, you don't want them to know.
Wow.
Right? I know. I was like, wow, babe, that's a great freaking point. So anyway, I let him debadge my car. And I've kind of carried that mindset ever since of the people who know will know. And the people who need the label to know, you shouldn't care about their opinion, which is very elitist. But I think that's kind of the way that this exclusivity game works.
Elitist maybe, but also it's like, it does, there. It speaks to me, and maybe this is too extreme, but to me, it speaks to like a sort of character because when we see, not again, not always, obviously, but very so often, like the people you see who are decked out, I mean, there's so much you don't want to be involved with there. There's a whole personality attached to that person. Plus, how often do we find these people are super broke? I mean, again, I've watched YouTube videos on these quote unquote influencers with quote unquote money. And they're like, so many of them are just like in so much debt. And even, I mean, I don't know if we need to go there fully, but like, even I know you mentioned at some point with like the Chinese market, like, I don't know how much of that is actually necessarily real.
Let's talk about that because there is a whole dark side to luxury. And I think it's something that you probably have a little bit more exposure to than us. Can you talk to us about some of the maybe yucky or unethical practices that you've been exposed to? Like,
Yeah, it was crazy. I know totally what you're insinuating. And yeah, this was a wild story. I mean, I heard some crazy stories. And I won't mention the brands or anything that, I mean, my teachers did not hold back at all, because I think they had their own just like frustrations, or just like, how is this even going on? So they were just venting, for lack of a better word, to their students. But dark things from, you know, this is not even what I mentioned to you before, but dark things from like CEOs that are totally unhinged, who would in their fury take golf, what are they called, golf clubs, and hit their employees' cars when they were not happy with with things, which is just obviously super violent. And perhaps what people would care about more is this, I'm assuming some people will know, because I do know Burberry was kind of called out for it more publicly in terms of burning excess bags. And I do think it's been talked about that Louis Vuitton as well. And like, it's just for all this, and it's kind of like to save face, to save exclusivity, to save, which is one and the same, basically for their own image, to maintain a particular image, to do something that is not only like, I mean, people put their time to create those, but also like for the environment. Burning leather is not good for our environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's similar to the story. This is legend and lore and never been confirmed, but Erica Sett was on the podcast a few months back. She's a diamond expert. And I was asking her about De Beers, who it was claimed used to dump diamonds into the ocean to control the supply. And it's not just about controlling the supply so that diamonds are more valuable. It's about controlling and manipulating the consumer into this falsehood of scarcity. And Mackenzie, I would love to kind of advance the conversation too and start to touch on what you're doing now. But you made such a great point about the intersection of luxury and an abundance mindset. Can you speak to that?
I'll try to be brief. I think it could be, there's a lot there, because even from the company's perspective, which is actually kind of how I see it probably the most, if I think of like these, because some of these companies, it's not like they're starting with like a ton, like so much capital. Like in some cases, yeah. In some cases, sure, they're part of a huge conglomerate, and maybe they are. But if you think of those, like those little families that originally started these companies, they came with an abundance mindset. They were not trying to, okay, we have to get this done in like 2 days, which is probably nowadays things take like how long, a few minutes to get churned out of a factory. Even without this like huge, massive wealth underneath their belts, they were willing to take the time to put their like blood, sweat, and tears into creating these incredibly made pieces of art. I think that's how they would probably describe it.
Yeah.
Because they weren't ascribing to this like compression of time, which is the biggest scarcity I think that we all kind of live in nowadays. And I'm not saying it's the little person's fault, because it's like this world that we live in. And granted, probably a lot of these people live in like rural Italy, where life is slower and it's so much cheaper. So it's not the people's fault, I wouldn't say, especially North America, where it's like expensive and we have to move fast. But they made decisions basically like, why put your factory there versus in New York City or like wherever else it would cost so much more. So they made these choices to maintain, from my perspective, this abundance mentality around what it was that they were creating. And then from there, of course, they can go on and charge prices that we would equate to giving them abundance, or having people who buy into it, this sense of abundance, this energy of abundance.
That's so on point. And I had never thought about that too. Like, what was Hermes the day they made their first bit for a horse, right? Like the company didn't start, maybe it did. I actually don't know the history that well, but you know, like I don't know the origins of every single fashion house. And I think that's a good reminder for all of us listening. And, you know, the cheeky tagline of the show is like, we're building the trust funds we wish we were born with. I think a lot of us are having this experience of the haves and have nots, and I want more and I want to get more. Well, you have to build more. And I think you're right. Like the more authentic and true you stay to your art and to your process and, you know, working within the constraints of time and all the things, but making those decisions that feel aligned, that is a practice in abundance. That is a practice in faith. That is a practice in trusting the universe and going mm-hmm. on your path.
Yeah. What was coming to your mind prior to me saying that? I'm curious your own thoughts.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think one of the things that I learned I had the weirdest jobs, Mackenzie, when I was going through high school and college. And one of them was I worked at a tanning salon. And I worked.
Well, you have great skin. I can actually kind of see that.
Thanks. That's the help of a lot of lasers now after all the sun damage. But when I was in college, and I would sell tanning packages, I would sell tanning lotion. And we had such an incredible education program around all of these lotions. It's like we had this woman come out and she'd be so entertaining and give these presentations about all of these made up lotions and potions. It was like, this one's 10X, this mm-hmm. one's 100X, this one has da 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 da, all these like made up names for things that it didn't do. And the lotions were like $100 or $120 a bottle. And I needed to make commission. And so I had to reconcile the fact like I could not afford a $100 bottle of lotion. But most of the people that came into TAN where I worked, which was in La Jolla, which is a very affluent area of San Diego, that was nothing to them. And I was there to provide them with the service and the results that they wanted. And I had to get over my money mindset to be able to sell those things to them, because I couldn't afford it didn't mean that they couldn't. Yeah. And I think that that's one of the things that still gets in my way of like, is this price too high? Or can I afford this? Like, I'm selling branding and strategy packages to multi-billion dollar corporations, and I'm fussing around $5,000 on a package. Like, that still gets in my way. Yeah. So when I think about luxury and abundance, it's about perspective. It's about like seeing where other people are coming from. Also knowing that I'm on the journey that has and has not. That's a great reminder of like, I'm not a have not. I am do not have yet. It's on.
Yes. Oh, that's brilliant and beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. And I can only imagine that was the mindset. So there, it like starts with that first creator, whoever was the first creator. And I'm not talking about like universe here. I mean, that particular entrepreneur. And then it extends to their employees. And you know this better than anyone. It extends to their employees and it extends to their customers. And it's just this whole beautiful bubble of that abundant energy. Yeah.
And I think I was just thinking also like that, did you ever watch the Gucci movie with Lady Gaga? Is so bad.
No.
Oh my God, Mackenzie. It's like the acting is atrocious. I love the story. But
when
also,
did that come out? I don't even remember that.
Oh my gosh. It was good that you don't remember it. They probably hid it under the rug because the acting was so terrible. But Adam Driver was also a star in it. And it tells the story of how, well, it's mostly about the wife. But on alternative side to that, or am I getting my movies mixed up? There was also recently a Ferrari movie that came out, which I thought was also Adam Driver. Maybe I'm wrong. Where they talk about Enzo Ferrari and him being the visionary, the one that pushes the most and, these leaders in this vision. And I think a lot of us out there that are trying to build something, like staying in that visionary mindset is really important. And I feel like it's very challenging to do that with the onslaught of emails and Slack messages and appointments and kids having to go to soccer or whatever it is. I think it's a perfect segue, Mackenzie, into how you work with people and support them in that journey. Can you tell the audience a little bit more about what you're doing now?
It is the perfect segue. How did you do that? You're a great host. That was some magic. Yeah. Eventually, I did leave that industry. I will always love the creativity of that world, particularly, I mean, the fashion side of it. Will always love it. The industry was very fast for me. And over time, I ended up coming into coaching and working with women. So really, it comes down to helping them deepen self-trust. And the way I see it is coming back into, and this word is not the best, balance, but harmony might be a better word. Mm-hmm. So whether we're so much so on this, like, I can do everything myself, don't need anyone, or we're on this like super helpless side, like learned helplessness, coming back into that balance. And I want to just keep it super simple, but really helping women with that, because I guess I needed it. I guess that's the truth. That's where it all starts, right after the fashion world. I'm like, who am I? Mm-hmm. Who am I? And that was a segue and so many years. And then I was like, I think I would love to do that for work. In the ways people have helped me. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally resonate with that. And I just have to say to the audience too, we'll put Mackenzie's socials and all contact info in the show notes. But if you need a little bit of a soulful pick me up, your Instagram is where I go for that. And just the way that you look at the world and share through your lens is really refreshing. And I really appreciate how you show up in that way.
Thank you so much, Amber. Thank you so much for having me on in general. This is, I mean, it flew by. I cannot believe the time.
I know. I literally have so much more to talk to you about. We might have to do a part two.
I truly.
Before I let you go today, I would love to have you answer some of our rapid fire rich girl questions so you can get to know a little bit more about the behind the scenes of Mackenzie's life. Are you down?
Yeah.
Okay. How about this first question? What is your favorite place to vacation?
Oh yeah. Okay. When it can it be a little bit slower than rapid. Okay. Because I love visiting big cities when I'm on my own. And so I love going to like Paris and London, but when I'm with someone, I like going to more Mediterranean. So really anything on the Mediterranean.
Interesting. Is that because of this exploration vibe within you of going at your pace and then connecting down with someone?
Yeah, I think it is. It's like when you're on, when I'm on my own, at least I like to feel creative and inspired. Yeah. And so that's what the big cities kind of give me. But then with someone else, it's just like, let's chill, let's enjoy the views and like, you know, not going to, it's not, it still is so fulfilling, but it's not this like inspiration trip.
Oh, I love that. It's a great distinction. Mm-hmm. Okay. What's one of the best investments you've ever made?
So definitely my coach. The reason I just laughed was because the first time I was looking at your questions, I was like, my coach. Yeah, that's it. And then I was like, no, also my condo. And look at the podcast that I'm on. Yeah, that was is one of the best ones. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Love that. What is your guilty pleasure?
Well, the obvious one that is very me is just getting into bed so early, like 7 o'clock PM. That is my favorite thing. But the other thing is these really dense, like buttery cookies that my boyfriend and I had in Paris, like a few months ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God. I love a cookie and I love butter. So that sounds like heaven.
it was like dripping in butter. It was so good. It was so good.
Amazing. What advice would you give a 21-year-old you?
The mindset that I can still get in that I need to come back to this always is like, if I'm feeling stuck, it's remembering I'm not here forever. And especially at that point in time in my life, I felt like, oh my God, I'm like in this job. I'm going to be here forever. I didn't know I was depressed, but I was. And it was like, I just thought I was there forever. So now I would say like, you're going to be okay. Like, this is just a one chapter of your life. Like, even not even like probably a very small chapter of your life. And it actually has a lot of purpose. And I would also try to get her to lighten up a little bit. She was so existential. I mean, my goodness, it was such an existential time in my life. It was honestly like, what is the point? Well, I don't get the meaning, not in a suicide ideation kind of way, but in like a genuinely, what is the point? I don't get it. What is the point of this? Like, I would have said, like, why don't you go see your friends a little bit more? You know, like, just like,
stop thinking so much. I needed that advice too. I still need that. I take things very seriously at times.
Yeah.
And I was also exposed to like a lot of alternative thinking at that time in my life. And I needed that advice too. I needed a you in my life at 21.
Same. We're all, I think, not all, but so many of us at that age. God.
Yeah, so true. Okay, last question for you, Mackenzie. What in your life makes you feel the wealthiest?
Yeah, I actually did think about this for a moment. And really, it's, you know, that when you're on vacation and it's not like, for me, it's not like the night that I arrive there. It's like the first morning when you wake up and you're in whatever kind of accommodation you've booked and you're just like, I've arrived, I'm here, I have like the whole vacation ahead of me, and you just feel so good. And hopefully you're in a great hotel or you're in a great Airbnb or something of that sort. And it's that feeling when you wake up.
I couldn't agree more. That like abundance, that expansiveness, that lack of an alarm, that feels delicious. I love it. All right, Mackenzie, tell everyone where they can find you, whether it's Instagram, your website. We want to get in touch.
Yeah, the easiest is definitely Instagram. I'm just Mac. My last name's not the easiest. So Mac, M-A-C-K, Bel Castro, but I'm sure it'll be linked up so people don't have to spell that Italian name.
You're truly a delight. I'm so grateful to have this conversation with you. There's so much more we have to discuss. But your insights and luxury and sharing all of your education and the years that you spent in that industry is a gift. So thank you for being here, Mackenzie.
Thank you so much, Amber. It was so fun.
feeling rich? I hope so. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Old Money. If you have questions you want answered, email me at oldmoneypodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on social. We are at Old Money Podcast and I am at your service. If this episode spoke to you, inspired you, helped you, if you took a single note, it would mean the world to me if you could please just take a minute to rate and review the podcast. And if you're not doing so already, subscribe. And if you have friends who like getting rich, please share this episode with them, even if it's just on your Instagram story. And I'd love you more than Jeff Bezos loves Amazon Prime. Thank you so much, and I will talk to you on the next episode. Remember, I'm not your lawyer, I'm not your tax professional, and I'm not your financial advisor. The content presented in this podcast is intended to entertain, educate, inspire, and support listeners in their personal and professional development and does not constitute business, financial, or legal advice. In addition to that, this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services.